Good morning. When I'm giving Sesshin talks, each time I give a talk, there's so many things that come into my mind that it's hard to decide what exactly to talk about, because it's a matter of process of elimination. Because my mind is working continuously. Thinking about what we were talking about yesterday, when I was talking about the inanimate preaching the Dharma, expounding the Dharma continuously, I think the problem that we have is thinking in terms of animate and inanimate. You can never really resolve animate and inanimate. Because we think, as it was defined yesterday, animate means with consciousness. That was the definition we used. And inanimate is without consciousness. Of course, what Tozan and his teachers are talking about is beyond animate and inanimate. Beyond consciousness, what we call consciousness. Because animate, dividing into animate and inanimate, is a dualistic process. So as long as you have this dualistic process, you can never resolve it or even understand it completely. So instead of saying animate and inanimate, to simply say all life is continuously expounding the Dharma. So if you say all life, then you might think, well, this is, there are different kinds of life. So life, well, any term you use has its problems. But life is inclusive of everything. Everything on Earth is if we're thinking in terms of Earth or cosmos, cosmic life and personal life. This is what we're always concerned with. Cosmic life and personal life. And then we divide into cosmic and personal. That's another duality. But actually, our life is both cosmic and personal at the same time. Suzuki Roshi says, our cosmic life is the most personal thing. Our practice is very personal. And yet, there's no person. So if we say, if we look at what we call inanimate objects and think of them more as, think of everything more as everything is expressing life, whatever that means, or you can invent another word. All beings are expressing or that's better. All life is expressing.
Here? How do you spell that keyword?
Well, everything is presenting itself. Everything in the universe is presenting itself. Here am I, my personal life. Everything is doing that. That's a grain of rice is expressing its personal life. It's a grain of rice person. As I was saying yesterday, when I was used to do these sweat lodge with Little Bear at Pine Valley, and we'd heat up these rocks all day long, big fire, and they'd be red. And then someone would take a little basket and bring the rock in, and everyone would say, "Welcome, rock person." It was very intimate. So this rock, red rock, was expressing something very that we had to be very careful with. And then Little Bear would take his dipper and go, and the steam would, well, water and the steam would come up, and everybody hit the ground. Because you can't stand it if you're sitting up or standing up. Anyway, so a grain of rice is a living being. Every single grain of rice is a living being. My feeling about cooking rice is that we should understand that I like to understand, I'll put it that way, that I want to bring out the quality of every grain and let it cook from the inside so that they don't destroy its life. And when you eat it, its chemical nature is transforming and becomes my nature, becomes part of my body, and its elements are becoming part of myself. So, my person. So apples, each one of those apples is a complete being, and it's in itself expressing itself completely. To me, this is the nature of how we prepare food. We don't try to fix it, but we try to bring out its nature so that it's still alive when we're eating it. You know, in Asia, people eat live fish. I can remember being in a restaurant and the guy peeling the fish when it's live, and then, you know, that's going too far. This is like honoring the food, right? Instead of destroying it, you're honoring it as a living being. And this is how we become one with our environment and with the living beings around us. So everything is, you know, the apple is saying, This is the secret of Dharma, right here. The grain of rice is saying, this is the absolute total expression of the universe as this living being, living grain of rice. So when we make this effort to understand the nature of each of these sentient beings, non-sentient beings, we don't know what they feel. Although, you know, just back in the 70s or 80s, someone did a study of cutting cabbage, and they could hear this cabbage scream. At least, you know, that was the understanding, but whales, we also know that whales talk as well. You know, everything's talking to each other, and all life forms are talking to each other in some way. If we were really totally sentient beings, we would be able to hear the ants talking to each other. But we're very limited in our sentient composition, and we hear so little, we see so little, we feel so little, but we think that we are really great and expansive. But and so then we look at the other forms of life and we say, well, you know, they don't speak. You know, the evolvement of language is so removed from directness. It's like something made up. Whereas other forms of life are so highly developed. We call them the lower forms of life. But that's our ego, our misunderstanding, because the lower forms of life are such higher forms that they don't need all this interpretation. They speak directly. They act directly. And they're all teaching us. But when something is teaching us, we have this tendency to destroy it. It's true. When the pilgrims landed, the Indians were willing to teach them, but we destroyed them. Destroyed the culture. And now we're saying, oh yeah, you know, the Indians had this and they understood that, but it's too late, sort of. And we go around the world destroying other cultures because they're primitive or... But every culture has its way of maintaining itself. And if you start taking the pieces out of it and replacing them with something else, they fall apart. Culture is a very delicate structure. So, Dogen has I realize he has a fascicle on this subject of Tozan's question about the insentient preaching the Dharma. Although, I think pretty much. He says, Tozan responds to his teachers from the point from as a non-sentient being. Unless we realize that we're all non-sentient beings, we cannot understand what a sentient being is. Because we have not put ourselves in the place of being a non-sentient being. So how can we possibly understand non-sentient beings? How can we possibly understand our self as sentient beings? This is a great point. This is a wonderful koan for us. Because we always look at something from the point of view of self-centeredness. It's hard to step out of ourself and see things from a different perspective. It's hard for us to see things from or understand things from a Buddhist perspective. When we read, study the Heart Sutra, it's so kind of baffling because it's from the point of view of, it's Buddha's point of view, not ordinary person's point of view. And so, you know, how do we, the point of our practice is to bring every moment to life. Dogen says, if you rely on the truth, then that's a big mistake. If you create the truth, that's Dharma. It looks like there's some truth and that we have to try to base our life on it. But actually, we are creating the truth all the time. This is a big koan for us. In Asia, and some of the islands in the Pacific, and all around Asia, people make religious statues, religious figures, but they're not alive. They're not alive until they paint in the eyes. And then there's a ritual, a painting in the eyes. And if we look at that, and also we do that, you know, when we have a Buddha figure that comes into the Zendo, we have a ceremony, a painting in the eyes, eye-opening ceremony. We don't give it eyes, we open the eyes. And so this connection between our creativity and creating something inside and giving it life outside. And the life that we give to something outside reflects the life inside. So it's a complete cycle of inside. There's no inside or outside. We say this is outside, but the outside comes from the inside, and the outside reflects back to the inside. So it's really a circle with no outside or inside. And sometimes we think, well, that's just, you know, primitive stuff, you know, which it is, fortunately. So-called primitive people, as we know, I'm not telling you something new, relate to everything as the one body. You know, with the Indians, the eagle says something, you know, and the tortoise says something, and all the animals have their place in relationship. In Mahayana Buddhism, in Zen Buddhism, the old saying, the true human body is the whole universe, is what we have to understand. And our whole practice is geared toward, or pointed toward, realizing that the true human body is the whole universe. So this is called waking up. Every once in a while, we wake up. Zazen is waking up, moment by moment. Just being in this moment. When we're just in this moment, without thought coverings, then we become, we're in the state of awe or wonder, because the present moment is revealing itself as it is. But often we think that it's boredom because it's not satisfying the busyness of our creative mind. Not that our creative mind is bad, but often our creative mind obstructs the reality of now without any discrimination.
Sojin?
Yes.
You know, there's something that I'm really perplexed with, and moving towards that state of awe, or that, you know, state of really appreciating everything, I feel like there's a conflict that presents itself. For example, I'm on my way to Zazen, I'm coming here, and it's been raining, and then there's all these worms on the sidewalk, and I feel like Zazen is, that's But then there's all these worms, and I feel like there's these conflicts that present themselves the more I sort of expand to, you know, there's the sidewalk, pay attention, you're walking, or, well, but I'm supposed to be here, but now I got to take care of these worms. Or
that's a great colon for you. it's the koan that we all have. That's great, you know. It's okay. You know, rescue the worms. If you feel that the worms should be rescued, rescue the worms in place of zazen. Rescuing worms first, zazen second.
Why?
Well,
what about picking up the lamb?
Then never mind. This story. When I was, you may have heard this story, at Tassajara, we used to have this huge Makugyo. It was destroyed in the fire. Big Makugyo, the big beaver. And Suzuki Roshi was there, and I was doing the beaver. And there was a spider on the top of the Makugyo. But the beater, you know, the vibration was so strong that it was drawing the spider into the center of the Makugyo. And at the end, I asked Suzuki Roshi a question, you know. I told him the story. I said, well, what should I do? He said, if you feel that you don't want to hit the spider, just stop and let everything fall into chaos. It's okay. You don't always know what's right. You know, you have to decide what's right on the spot. This is called following the living precepts. Is deciding what's right on the spot, on each moment. That's live precepts. So you're talking about the live precepts. The dead precepts would be, I should do this and I should do that. But the line precepts is, I understand I should do this and that, but when it comes, push comes to shove, I have to decide what to do. So, this is called saving all beings. So one time you might want to just go to zazen, the other time you may feel that you need to deal with the worms. Well, either way is okay, but you have to decide. So the question came up yesterday, or the day before, something like that. The monk asked, can you hear it? Hoshan? And he said, no, I can't, replied the national teacher. The monk said, if you haven't heard it, how do you know that non-sentient beings expound the Dharma? And the national teacher said, fortunately, I haven't heard it. If I had, I would be the same as the sages, and you, therefore, would not hear the Dharma that I teach. In that case, ordinary people would have no part in it, said the monk. I teach for ordinary people, not sages, replied the national teacher. What happens after ordinary people hear you? Asked the monk. They are no longer ordinary people, said the national teacher. The monk asked, according to which sutra does it say that non-sentient beings expound the Dharma? Clearly, you shouldn't suggest that it's not part of the sutras. Haven't you seen it in the Avatamsaka Sutra? It says, the earth expounds Dharma, living beings expound it throughout the three times, everything expounds it. Then Dongshan said, I still don't understand. And would the master please comment? And then Foishan raised his fly whisk and said, do you understand? No, I don't. Please, Hoshang, explain, replied Dongshan. And Guishan said, it can never be explained to you by means of the mouth of one born of mother and father. And Dongshan asked, does the master have any contemporaries in the way in any sense of the union? Right. So there's a little story here about Dongshan. Dongshan doing a memorial service for Yunyan, who was his last teacher. So it says, during a memorial service for Yunyan, before Yunyan's portrait, a monk asked, when the former master said, just this, when Dongshan was leaving Yunyan, Yunyan asked, where are you going? Dongshan replied, although I am leaving you, I still haven't decided what I'll, where I'll stay. And then Yunyan asked, are you going to Honan? And no, replied Dongshan. And then, where will you return to? Asked Yunyan. And Tozan said, I will wait until you have a fixed residence. And Yunyan said, after your departure, it will be hard to meet again. And Dongshan said, it will not be hard to meet. So, Dongshan is having a memorial service for Yunyan. And the monk asked, what teaching did you receive while you were at Yunyan's place? And Tozan said, although I was there, I didn't receive any teaching. Since you didn't actually receive any teaching, why are you conducting this memorial? Asked the monk. Well, why should I turn my back on him? Replied Dongshan. And so the monk says, if you began by meeting Nanchuan, why do you now conduct a memorial service for Yunyan? Asked the monk. And then Tozan said, it is not my former master's virtue, or his Buddha nature, Dharma, that I esteem. Only that he did not make exhaustive explanations to me. Since you are conducting this memorial feast for the former master, do you agree with him or not? Asked the monk. The master said, I agree with half, and I don't agree with half. Why don't you agree completely? Asked the monk. The master said, if I agree completely, then I would be ungrateful to my former master. So this is a kind of wonderful exposition of Tozan's teaching and Suzuki Roshi's teaching as well. This is like exactly the heart of Suzuki Roshi's teaching. I would say he copied Dongshan, but he was very influenced by Dongshan, by Dongshan's way.
So, Jim, would you clarify what you were reading from there? What exactly
you said? What is the
book?
The book?
Yeah, what?
This book is The Record of Dongshan.
Yeah, and?
By my old friend William Powell. It's a very good book, very nicely translated. So, somehow I segued into this. Mm-hmm. Dongshan's teachers, you know, were very kind to him because they demonstrated the Dharma, but they didn't explain it. Dongshan had to really work to try to understand what his teachers were actually expressing. They didn't really teach him anything. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult for the teacher to not teach anything. For me, it's the hardest thing. Everyone expects something, you know. But the role of Dongshan's teachers, who are all in alignment with each other, even though their methods were all different, to send this guy from one teacher to another. Well, maybe you should go see. No? And each one knew what the other one was without being told, because they were all on the same level. And they could see right away, you know, who Dongshan was, what he was, where he was. And they each gave him the same koan in a different way. Each one a little different way, but it's the same koan. And till finally, Dozan was leaving his master, and you know, and he asked him, Yunyan, where will we meet? And Yunyan made a circle like this. And so Dozan is leaving. So just before Dozan, just before leaving, Dongshan asked, if after many years someone should ask, if I am able to portray the master's likeness, how should I reply? You know, often the transmitted disciple would make a portrait of his teacher, often. So this has a little bit to do with that, like how would I describe you? How would I portray you, in other words, one way or another? And after remaining quiet for a while, Yunyan said, just like this. Another koan. Dongshan was lost in thought. Yunyan said, having assumed the burden of this great matter of the Dharma transmission, you must be very very cautious, very careful. So Yunyan transmitted Dharma to Dongshan, and now he's saying be careful and take good care of yourself and take good care of the Dharma. So Dongshan remained dubious about what Yunyan had said, or maybe he didn't quite get to ponder this koan. So later, as he was crossing a river, he saw his reflected image and experienced a great awakening to the meaning of the previous exchange. And he composed the following gatha, which is translated in various ways. You're probably familiar with this gatha. I often give this to a shuso. And here's the way it's usually translated. Earnestly avoid seeking without, lest it recede far from you. Today, I am walking alone, yet everywhere I meet him. He is now no other than myself, but I am not now him. It must be understood in this way in order to merge with suchness.
Could you please read that again?
Yeah. Earnestly avoid seeking without, lest it recede far from you. Today, I am walking alone, yet everywhere I meet him. In other words, everywhere I meet myself is really what it's supposed to say. He is now no other than myself, but I am not now him. It must be understood in this way in order to merge with suchness. Yunyan said, just this. He meant suchness. So, in a way, he's talking about Yunyan, but he's really talking about himself, and he's really talking about his place in the universe. And when Bill Kwong had his Dharma, his Shuso ceremony, Tassajara, Suzuki Roshi gave him this koan. And the way Suzuki Roshi, he made a very free translation of this statement of this gatha. So he said, and it's a little clumsy, but he said, do not try to see the world as an object. He said, do not try to see the objective world. I mean, can't help seeing the objective world, but we should not see the world objectively as an object. In other words, don't look on things, don't look on the world as an object outside of yourself as the subject. That you, which is given as something to see as an object, is not you yourself. I am going my own way now, and I meet myself wherever I go. Wherever I turn, I meet myself. If you understand that you, as an object, is not you yourself, then you have your own true way. You have a question?
Yeah. Could you say more about what he says, that it says to express something like to express gratitude to his teacher, mm-hmm. he was disagreeing with half of what he says.
Yes, I half agree and half not agree. So half agreeing and half not agreeing doesn't mean that he's disagreeing. It means you have to get beyond argument. It's not a matter of arguing with the teacher, although that may be. It's quite all right to argue with your teacher. I think what he means is I half embody my teacher. And then I'm on my own. Now I'm on my own. So, right. When I understand my teacher's teaching, that's merging with the teacher. And then finding my own way is half not agreeing. So it's really not, I don't think it's a matter of arguing. It's a matter of how you separate yourself and find your own way. If you don't find your own way and are simply always dependent on the teacher, then it's not complete. It's only complete when you embody the teaching of your teacher, and then you find your own way to express it.
I wanted to talk about something that you were discussing earlier in your talk from Dogen. Mm-hmm. If I remember it correctly, you said that he said to follow the truth is a mistake, but to create the truth is the way.
Yeah.
The last practice period we had as a theme, turning the Dharma wheel, right, and allowing the Dharma wheel to turn us. Yeah. And I was actually given in Chosan a response to the effect that I should look more towards allowing the Dharma wheel to turn me. So that sounds like a mistake from Dogen's saying, if I'm hearing it right.
Well, it depends on, you know, the situation. It depends on what he's talking about, because Dogen will take everything that you think is correct and turn it upside down. even if it is correct, because he'll take what you turn, what he turns upside down, to mean the same thing as right side up. To take the ground out from under your from what you're depending on.
So that was like a contextual teaching.
Contextual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps. I have to study more. I have to study. I haven't really studied that. But now that I'm interested in it in that way, I want to go back and study it.
First, I want to say, is there anything else besides contextual teaching?
Oh, no.
But that's not what I wanted to say. I just was thinking, I noticed, you know, you said, you quoted, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, but you quoted meeting with Suzuki Roshi and saying, oh, you know, I have my own problems and I'm not sure, you know, can I help people?
Yes.
And he said, yes, if you didn't have problems, you wouldn't be useful.
Yeah.
And
you wouldn't understand. Would
yeah.
You?
And yeah. That's one way that
like
I...
Like the Pope doesn't understand birth control.
That's one way that I understand that con, and I think that's I'm not sure if that's one of the things you meant about it, about if I could understand insentient beings, if I could hear it, you wouldn't be able to hear me. So it's sort of like if I were coming from some place of perfection,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't be able to talk to each other, really. Is that...
Something like that.
Yeah.
That would be too high. And so, although Suzuki Roshi, interestingly enough, knew a lot about Dharma, he never talked about it in that way. He always spoke about Dharma in the most common way. You know, very seldom ever used any technical terms or theoretical stuff. Or it was always just in the most common way, talking about your experience, your life. But in the same way the sixth ancestor did. We know. He talked about the Dharmakaya is your nature, Sambhogakaya is your wisdom, your manakai is your actions, you know. Where there are volumes written about what that means, which you can't understand. Linda.
Could you comment a little on he is now none other but myself, but I am not him?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at it, at the face of it, it looks like he's talking about union. Like, I'm one with union, yet union is union and I'm myself. Right? Union and I are, when I look in the, you know, Tozan's crossing the stream and he sees his reflection. But what does he see when he sees his reflection? Is he just seeing his nose and his eyes and stuff? So, when yes, he's seeing his eyes and his nose and stuff, but he's also seeing his true body, which is the stream itself. He's not saying the mirror is just an object that is reflecting back to me. When I'm crossing the stream is verifying me, and I'm verifying the stream. So I'm verifying union. Union is verifying me, but the stream is a stream. I'm me. Union is union. I'm me. It's like the white cloud is the parent of the blue mountain is the parent of the white cloud. All day long, and the white cloud is the child of the blue mountain. All day long, they, what do they do?
and watch each other.
Validate each other.
No, no.
And on each other?
All day long, they, without being, it's very important. Very important. In other words, all day long they relate to each other without being attached to each other.
I think it's just they don't hinder each other.
They hang out together.
No.
Confirm.
The first session on the colors was all day long they watch each other.
No.
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 Establish.
So could they have been reversed? Could he have also said, I am him, but he is not me?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the same statement?
Well, but it goes further than that. So that's the surface. The other, the deeper meaning is what Suzuki brought forth. In other words, when he's looking in the stream and he's instead of using the word he's using the word it. Don't, or as an object. In other words, yes, his teacher and his relationship with the teacher, it could be go the other way, but he's really talking about deep, more deeply, his the whole universe. The whole universe is me, but I'm, you know, I can't say that I'm the whole universe, but the whole universe is what has produced this, which I call me, and continues to do that. So it's like, you know, the grain of rice is, contains the whole universe. It is, but yet it's just a grain of rice. So Tozan realizes that he is the whole universe, but at the same time he is just himself. So this is both cosmic and personal. He realizes his cosmic nature as well as his personal nature, and that they're not, they're two, not two and not one.
So Jen, when I first stepped into this Zendo, I was struck by the beauty of these four pillars that you all brought from Gary Snyder's place. And when I came to sit here, I felt a little awkward about having a relationship with the pillar, but it was unavoidable. But since your talk yesterday, it's been going well. I feel as if they speak simply and beautifully and eloquently about being upright. And this morning I was reminded that the Buddha sat near a Bodhi tree on the morning that he experienced intimacy with morning star.
There's also a koan booklet record. The old Buddha communes with the pillar.
I would like to turn to the worms and the zazen.
What?
The worms and the zazen of Dean. I think I understand what you meant. What you're feeling, the worms. Say them. Say them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so concerned, don't say them. In other words, act and speak from your heart, your feeling. But aren't there times when reflection is really called for rather than going with your heart at the moment?
Yeah, reflection
is
fine.
So it's a balance.
Yeah, reflection is fine. When you're in a hurry, you have to reflect quickly. Sometimes you just have to act, you know. But I remember Suzuki Roshi talking about somebody going into Tassajara. They saw a cat devouring a mouse. And the woman said, well, what should I have done? Should I have saved the mouse? And she said, well, maybe. But, you know, this is like something happening outside of, you know, our control, so to speak. This is like nature taking its course. And maybe the mouse was a little bodhisattva saying, don't worry about me, I'm okay, I'm taking care of this with the cat. The cat is devouring me. It's okay. It's got to be okay. Otherwise, how can anything live? Because everything is eating something all the time. We think maybe we're eating meals three times a day, but actually we're eating all the time, inadvertently. You know, we get a lot of our our nutriments from the air, as well as our poisons. But in an unpoisoned place, we get a lot of our nutrients just from the air. I'm eating bugs all the time without knowing it. But anyway, so we have our human feelings, and then there's nature. And they don't always have the same idea. So, this is, you know, if you want to intervene and you feel that's right, do it. If you feel that nature is taking its course, I remember, this has been done my last statement. I think I've told you this not recently before. When Frank Cook, the professor who translated Denko Roku, back in the 70s, we were friends, and he lived in Berkeley, and he was a professor. And we had a meeting in our living room on Dwight Way, which is, you know, kind of where we met. And there was a circle of people, and we were talking. And we were talking about life and death or something like that. And in walks the cat with a mouse and steps right into the middle of the circle. Were you there, Ron?
No. But I can imagine.
So it was all a wonderful start. Come on. Life is just full of these kinder poems.
Was it good?
Didn't you hear it?
Yeah.
There goes the intention of preaching the Dharma.